From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. So glad you're with me all week long. It's been an impactful week. In New York, we feel like the UN has overwhelmed everything. If you're in the Southeast, you feel the hurricane has overwhelmed everything. Though you understand it, one thing you cannot miss is an election that almost everyone feels like they're engaged in a matter of moments. We'll be with Senator Shelley Moore Capito. She's going to weigh in on everything going on and all the impact little things taking place today. For example, President Trump is meeting with President Zelensky in about 45 minutes. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
They say that there was a quid pro quo where the mayor intervened to speed along a fire inspection approval process for a Turkish consulate. But the mayor can say, look, that's what mayors do. You know, this is a city with a lot of diplomats, and we want to avoid diplomatic problems, including the arrival of the president of that country. So he has defenses.
Yep, Mayor Eric Adams indicted. He'll be arraigned in hours and charged today. While a 57-page indictment has allegations that are disturbing, I just got to wonder if politics is playing a role in this. For example, how he was critical of President Biden. And suddenly, it all fell apart.
Number two.
An operator from Butler ESU had exited the Red Barn behind the stage. When shots rang out, he was able to quickly identify where the shots were coming from. And he fired one round at the shooter, which caused the shooter to recoil and briefly fall out of sight. No other rounds were fired by the shooter after he was engaged by the Butler ESU operator.
So, who killed him? Assassination investigations are revealing outrageous errors, and the FBI stonewalling while the Iran threat remains. We look at the revelations that have emerged after this week's hearings.
Number one.
We are going to the border. We've been to the border. This whole thing about the border, we've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe.
Yeah, that's.
I don't understand the point that you're making.
Well, she went to the border once in 2021, and she's going back just 3 years later. Harris' first visit to the border in 3 years, as I mentioned, will try to convince America she actually cares about the issue as Trump meets goes to Michigan today. Plus, we're going to look at the new Fox polls in Arizona and Georgia. Let's bring in Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia. Senator, I know that you are friendly with Joe Manchin, but it looks like you're going to get a Republican partner in November in Jim Justice.
Well, no doubt. Jim Justice, our governor, who's a great governor, will be coming to Capitol Hill, and that will be one race in the barn for the Republicans. And I think he will win overwhelmingly, yes. And so I'm very pleased about that. I endorsed him early, came for his announcement, and pleased that he's moving forward towards a victory.
What is your best next race that mm-hmm. you feel more as confident on?
Yeah, you know, I think Montana is the race that appears as though it's moving in the right, not moving in the right direction, but the numbers are getting, the spread's getting more for Tim Sheehy to defeat John Tester. Ohio's looking good with Bernie Marino to defeat Sherrod Brown. Pennsylvania is another one with David McCormick, neck and neck with Casey. I think Michigan is an open seat, which is always a great opportunity, has a real possibility there. Mike Rogers is a fantastic guy, served in Congress with him. He would be a wonderful senator, a great Republican. Maryland is up for grabs, which is hard to believe, and Arizona, Nevada. There's lots going on, but I put the top three probably Ohio, West Virginia, and Montana.
So let's talk about where Vice President Harris is going. You know, she has ignored the border. She didn't want to go to the border. She basically got badgered into it to show how long it's been. The video that we see, she's wearing a mask outdoors. So it was mid-pandemic where she went to the border,
right.
And over 8 million have gotten through, let alone the gotaways. Here is Mitch Landrieu talking about how strong she is on the border. He's one of the chief surrogates for the vice president, cut three.
On every day that she has been in this race, she has moved ahead and closed the gaps, and she will do this on immigration. She's actually gone to the border tomorrow, and I don't think I need to remind you or anybody else once again, we actually negotiated a border bill, the toughest border bill that has ever been negotiated, that Senator Langford, who's a very conservative Republican, led, and the president and vice president were in favor of that. And the only reason why that bill failed is because Donald Trump wanted to use that as a political wedge.
Is that how you know it, Senator Capito?
No, that the bill in and of itself died on its own weight. It had some controversial aspects to it. For instance, allowing 5,000 in a day that were, I think, very problematic for a lot of people. And let's just, you know, for Mitch Landrieu and for the vice president to say that that's the only reason these numbers are high is ludicrous, because this supposed bill only occurred 6 months ago. They've been there 3.5 years. If this was an issue they cared about, she would have been there more often. But also, the numbers and some of the provisions that President Trump put into place, they would have put into place. And they've only just now recently done it. They didn't care. Open borders, open arms, come on in. And you see just the numbers, the drugs, the gotaways, the crime that's come with this is very unsettling to the American people.
Some people notice that the numbers have down of late. A lot of people, I believe, because people can apply on their app from their country.
Right.
And they will send them to a plane and fly them in.
Right. And you can come, if you come to the border crossings, you're not counted in the numbers anymore. If you're a Haitian or a Cuban coming in, you're not counted in the numbers. And those numbers are 500,000. It will be close to 400, a little over 400,000 this year alone. So they're messing with the numbers to try to make it look better in an election year. Have they come down? Probably. But why is that? I just mentioned they've put in some of the provisions that President Trump had in effect that the president maintained and the vice president maintained they couldn't do. So it's we can't let them get away with this, because it'll go right back up under her if she is successful for the presidency.
And I
think it's good to know, too, Brian, sorry, that she's going to the border. But where's she really going? She's going to a fundraiser, and she's going to make a stop at the border. So, you know, the priorities there are totally backwards.
So here's President Trump yesterday, cut 4. Mm-hmm.
Kamala Harris will be visiting the southern border that she has completely destroyed, from what I understand, tomorrow. Why would she go to the border now? She keeps talking about how she supposedly wants to fix the border. We would merely ask, why didn't she do it 4 years ago?
And that's the big question. Why you had no interest in it until you started running for president and saw that you were trailing Trump and by double digits?
No, and you know, it killed me in the very beginning when she became their nominee, in the manner of which she did. All of a sudden, she's backing out of being the border czar, when that was the big news almost 4 years ago. And you know, I think the American people are smarter than that. They see their cities overrun. They see the nightly news of people coming across the border in droves, and some of them in hundreds of people. They know the trafficking of children. They know that, you know, these unaccompanied children, they're all lost in the system, not all of them. But where's the outrage there? We've got kids that have come over that have been placed with sponsors that we have no idea where they are.
No, I hear
and
you.
That's an outrageous.
And I think the numbers are over 200,000. They just have no idea. And they were upset about kids being separated from their parents when they came over because they were breaking the law. That lasted about 2 weeks. This has lasted 3.5 years. And we don't know where 3.75 years. We don't know where there are. Senator Capito, the other big story is the investigation into the dual assassination attempts on President Trump. And there was some hearings this week. Senator Ron Johnson is really frustrated. And before I ask you, I want you to hear what he had to say. Cut 25.
Okay. They couldn't see Crooks. Crooks couldn't see them. And yet a bullet flew between the Hercules II sniper team. You know, the other thing that has been widely reported is local law enforcement took the first shot at Crooks. That local law enforcement officer was confident he hit Crooks. Now, again, we can't verify that because the body's been cremated. We haven't seen the autopsy report. Apparently, we'll have to subpoena it like the House did. We haven't seen a toxicology report. We don't have crime scene photos. We haven't received one of the FBI's transcripts from their over 1,000 interviews.
It's unacceptable for all that. Number one, I heard that, you know, listening to the autopsy yesterday in the House hearing, it looked as though the bullet must have went through the right side of his head and out his left lip. That would be the opposite side of where the snipers were, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the details of it as I do, but I know it's a colossal failure. The fact that they weren't communicating, that he'd been spotted and local officials were trying to make the Secret Service aware and they weren't on the same communication channels. I mean, it's almost like, are you kidding me? I mean, what kind of protection is that? A line of sight building? I mean, I've been on presidential visits before. That's not the way the Secret Service has conducted the ones I've been on. And we know that there are rogue actors and rogue people who want to kill President Trump. That's become more than obvious. And the fact that they don't overprotect or have enhanced security is just, I think, very, very questionable. And they get turned down for enhanced security items that they require, that they asked for in this Pennsylvania visit, they were turned down for.
Yeah. So,
and why didn't they take them off the stage? They knew. I mean, they knew. Why didn't they say, hey, warning, warning, somebody on the building, get him off of there? And they didn't do that. It's just unbelievable.
It is. You're also see China as a threat, and you're pushing the Strategic Act. What's that?
Well, we know that China is challenging us every single way, from military strength, economic power, global influence. I mean, they just shot a ballistic missile into the waters day before yesterday, right after President Biden addresses the UN. I mean, that's a total finger in the eye. And so this is legislation that would really crack down on strong positions to safeguard us against China's incursions. We would make sure that, you know, China's buying, that we see them try to buy our universities, they're trying to buy our farmland. Are we serious about disrupting that? Making sure that our partner nations and certainly the ones in the neighborhood with China have more strength, protecting our U.S. interests, all of these things. This is just a comprehensive look, and I think it's something we should really look at. Probably won't get to it this year, but we need to come together on.
Do you believe the Republicans are – where do you stand with the Republicans on Ukraine?
I've been a very big supporter of Zelensky and also of Ukraine, because I believe at the heart of this, pushing back Putin, preventing him from not just gaining property, but prestige and the ability to then move into another possible NATO nation, in the end – I think if we can support Ukraine, we need to give them full out abilities to use the weapons that we're giving them, which the Biden administration will not do, and that we need to push Putin back as much as we can and weaken him. I mean, he's losing hundreds of thousands of people, either through injury or death. And at some point, you know, we can weaken his systems, or Ukraine can, with our help. So I've been a supporter. I do think that Zelensky made a mistake earlier in the week by kind of wading into American politics. That's not a place he needs to be or should be. And it's going to be hard when he comes back to the United States Congress with the comments that he's made. And he probably is regretful of that.
He is. He's gonna, and hopefully they'll work it out with President Trump today. I think the spirit of backing Ukraine is great, but just to know that we did not do anything to get them ready for this conflict, that we thought they were going to lose in 4 days, and then we slow walked all these weapons and then restrict the ones we give them. So many people have died, so many buildings have been blown up because of the lack of strategic thinking when it comes to this conflict. Final thought?
Well, I think that I think if you travel into Europe, which I have, into NATO nations, they know that Putin is not going to stop. His recreation of the Soviet Union is his like holy grail. And if he can weaken Ukraine enough, he's got a good foothold to do that and, you know, strike fear in other nations. So I think we should have given them full out abilities to use the weapons we gave them and the expertise and the training that we gave them since 2008. But this administration handcuffed them, and you can see why it's prolonging so much.
All right. Thanks so much, Senator Shelley Moore, Capito of West Virginia. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You guys have a good day.
You got a 1-866-408-7669. I'll take some calls. And then after that, we have straight ahead. We'll be able to do that and go over also preview the president's stops in Michigan and the vice president's stop in Arizona. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I think there's no question that we've got to critically re-examine ICE and its role. I'm opposed to any policy that would deny in our country any human being from access to public safety, public education, or public health, period. Well, we are going to the border. We have to deal with what's happening at the border. There's no question about that.
That is the vice president pretending to be interested in what's going on at the border. And now she has to go out there and be engaged on what's happening at the border while never taking responsibility, getting a follow-up question, and shows how unserious she was at the border. Why was she unserious? Because, number one, she wasn't running for president. Joe Biden was running again. Number two is she was asked to do the job and basically refused to do it. And I actually said that. I remember doing this show thinking to myself, whatever you want to think about Joe Biden or Mike Pence, when they got a job, for example, Mike Pence was the coordinator for the pandemic. Pretty much a thankless job that we're trying to figure out on the fly. He did a fantastic job making sure governors got what they needed, making sure people acted with composure under pressure. And whatever you think of Joe Biden, he actually tried to do stuff at the border, was meeting with other countries. When she got that assignment, she basically ignored him. I mean, And here is what she said. Remember, when she finally gets to sit down, and by the way, this happened with Lester Holt. Cut one.
We are going to the border. We've been to the border. So this whole thing about the border, we've been to the border. We've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
Right. The point you're making is you don't know what you're doing, and you have no idea that was a ridiculous analogy. And Lester Holt just held you to feet to the fire, which means he's not going to get the interview. I'm sure that 60 Minutes is not going to do it either. And remember where she stood in 2018. Cut two.
A lot of the signs at the rally you just held were people standing there saying, abolish ICE.
Yeah.
Is that a position that you agree with?
Listen, I think there's no question that we've got to critically re-examine ICE and its role and the way that it is being administered and the work it is doing. And we need to probably think about starting from scratch because there's a lot that is wrong with the way that it's conducting itself. And we need to deal with that.
And then what would happen a few months later, she was Senator Kamala Harris, and that was 2018. And then she got the ICE director on and basically compared them to Nazis. What do you want to know? This is what you should know. When it comes to who do you trust on the border, people of Arizona, it is Trump by 15 points. It was Trump by 20 points in June. So Trump by 8 points on the economy. It was Trump by 15 points in June. So she wants to just shave a couple of points off in order to focus on being the abortion president. Because if she does win, it'll be because of that. Here's what President Trump plans to do to secure the border. He's going to stop the invasion, seal the border, send Congress a bill to ban sanctuary cities, bring back Title 42, restore and remain in Mexico, end catch and release, stop all migrant flights. Right there, it would go down 2/3. And the word would go out, can't get into America now, because Donald Trump's in there. That would be good, wouldn't it? Brian Kilmeade Show. Your calls and emails next. BrianKilmeade.com.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Every time she has a regular length campaign, she collapses. Remember, she started out very strong running for president and never could make it to Iowa. When you have a problem with the MSNBC, Stephanie Ruhle tells you that you didn't even answer the question, what do you think American independent voters are actually thinking?
That is Kevin McCarthy last night talking about the lack of savvy that Harris has sent, has shown. But she's got a good team around her trying to protect her. And a couple of times she's been unscripted. I think it's been a disaster. I thought Oprah was terrible. And if you don't believe me, even her supporters were not putting up any clips from that. And you had to see Oprah's face a few times. A few times she did. And she had to actually say, come in and define what she meant, meaning Harris. And the other time, as you see, is sitting there like, what the hell are you talking about? Here's the truth about the Democrats. They wanted to get rid of Biden. When they got rid of Biden, they thought it was going to be a competition to see who the best person is. And I remember Carville saying, yeah, if she should be one of the people competing to get the nomination. But to her credit, she quickly consolidated power, talked to her competition, say, you'll have a role in my administration, just get behind me. I have all the money that Joe Biden had. But this is what Kevin McCarthy said about the reality, because he knows Nancy Pelosi. Cut 10.
If you go today's date back 4 years ago, she's actually sitting 6.9% below the polling of where Joe Biden was. And I'll tell you this. What I was told by some Democratic congressional members, that Nancy Pelosi, while she was trying to get Biden out, she said, we can't have Kamala. She has lower polls than Biden. She'd be worse than Biden. So she never wanted Nancy to have Kamala Harris. She was advocating for somebody else, but she wanted Biden out. And I think it's coming home to roost now.
We'll see. I know it's really close. I just want to go over some of the poll numbers because Fox put them out. Fox put it out today, last night, around 6 o'clock, but I got it today. So in Arizona, two-way race, Trump's winning 50-48. He was trailing 50-49 in August. When it comes to who do you trust to do a better job in immigration, it's Trump, but he lost 5 points. On the economy, it's Trump, but he lost 7 points. Now, when she goes down to the border, it's going to be laughable to think she's an enforcer there. But will she make some moderates think that she suddenly cares about it? But if she really cared, she'd go to Aurora and see this Trendyaragua horrible gang that has taken over that city, has taken over cities like New York and Chicago. There's really going to be a gang war between a Venezuelan gang and an American gang. I mean, I'm pulling for the American gangs. I can't believe this. That's who we're doing. When it comes to the polls. Also, when it comes to Michigan, this is the other poll that's out. Harris on top of Trump by 1.5. Now, how I think that matters. I think that they can close the gap. It looked like they were losing Michigan. Trump was up in Michigan because of the dissatisfaction of the Arab community. There's a lot of uncommitted. But I think that's all winnable. And they say if you get Pennsylvania, you'll get Michigan. I think they're going to be very different. The problem that Trump has in Michigan is the Republican Party basically fell apart and started tearing each other's eyes out. When it comes to Pennsylvania, Dave McCormick against Senator Casey, they had 3 terms. Dad was governor. People are comfortable with him, but he doesn't do anything except for vote with Joe Biden 97% of the time. 97%. You can't even pretend to be a moderate and vote with him like that. So I think that Dave McCormick was somebody that's got a legitimate shot because of his resume. He's been out there. I think he's very professional. And he knows... he believes how to take on Casey. Now, having an open seat going against Fetterman would have been easier, but he was unable to defeat Oz. Here he's talking about taking on Casey and how much a better of a candidate he is now. Cut 15.
You learn more from losing or failing.
You're a better candidate now?
I think I'm a better candidate. The one thing I'm sure about is that I feel great about the campaign we're running. Everything I say, I believe. I feel deeply authentic. I feel deeply committed. I feel like I'm connecting
right.
with the people of Pennsylvania. I think they know that I'm not running to be a senator. I'm running to bring about change that's going to help the lives of the people of Pennsylvania. And this is an opportunity for me to really give back to the place that gave me so much.
You're going to have a chance to see that whole interview. And on the road, candid, get a slice of his life on the campaign trail. Plus, we do a real conversation. You hear that buzzing in the background? I'm actually on the bus. And we end with Washington's crossing. Remember when Washington crossed the Delaware, you've seen the paintings and the depictions? If you're ever in New Jersey, you could actually see the actual park. It is absolutely amazing the way they've preserved it. That was our last stop. Why? Because he talks about leadership all the time and what he learned at West Point, and he thinks that Casey has shown no leadership. He thinks he can from the Senate. Now, if he finds a way to beat Casey in Pennsylvania, my prediction, he did not say it to me, not even off the record, I believe he'll run for president. because it'll be wide open after this. It's another reason why people have been going around Trump more now than even 2016 and 2020, because they know win or lose, it's in or out. And they know how dramatically different the country will be, their job will be, if Harris wins. Personally, if Harris wins, I think it'd be terrible for the country. It's not how Ford's going to win. It's not if Joe Manchin's going to win. Then just flip a coin, center left to center right. Who cares? May the best campaign ideas prevail. But now you're looking at somebody who really doesn't know the job, understand the job, have the skills to do the job, who's literally winging it from day to day, refusing to go one-on-one, especially when you look at her track record. Our track record is 32% approval rating. After Joe Biden stepped aside, it rocketed to 47. What did she do to get it up 15 points? Nothing. It's called not being Joe Biden. I know it's always great if you're an anchor or a host replacing somebody that was ambivalent, wasn't motivated, very different from you, and not doing well. But all she had to do is to get more momentum than Biden is be able to answer a question, be able to work an eight-hour day, not to be screaming at people for no apparent reason, having people live in fear. But our big focus yesterday was the economy. Today, it is immigration. And she thinks she has a great message to give about immigration. She's not, they're also going to talk about the bill that got passed. I got it. But I wonder if she's going to bring up the wall, because the wall is laying in the desert. If I was Harris's campaign parent, I'm going to say, listen, people aren't believing that you're changing on all these issues. The one issue you came out and said, a wall is a medieval vanity project. If you want to show people that you've evolved, learned now that you got the job, how about stand in front of that wall and saying, when I win, I'm going to, and being that it's paid for, and here it is, I'm going to, and after talking to Border Patrol, I'm going to put it up. Now, you've sent it for scrap metal and tried to get rid of it, which is criminal. It's our money. You shouldn't be trading it in for pennies on the dollar with steel that's been built by a company with construction costs that already been built in. You go do that. I wonder if she's ever going to bring that up at all. I doubt it that she will do that, but because of the stigma with it. Donald Trump ending sanctuary cities. In 2016, they said it'll never happen. We'll be defiant. I think only the courts will stop him because the people are for it. Listen to Stephen Miller, Cut 8.
This visit, 4 years late, puts the issue of the border invasion front and center in this campaign. And as President Trump said at his event today, Kamala Harris is now loading up planes with illegal aliens and flying them into the heartland of America. Think about this, Sean. They are taking illegal aliens, flying them over the border, not even counting them in Border Patrol statistics, and depositing them in places like Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, in places like Charleroi, Pennsylvania, Springfield, Ohio, cities across North Carolina. Swing state after swing state, they are dumping illegal aliens by the hundreds of thousands. And some of them, as you've mentioned, are going on to commit heinous crimes. A Venezuelan gang member has just been charged in Prairie du Chien, a small, formerly idyllic town in Wisconsin, with a brutal sexual assault.
See, this is the key. Instead of saying they're sending their gangsters, they're saying they're criminals, they're saying bad people, I want the stories. Don't make it up. Don't dramatize it. Tell the stories, because they're horrific. That's why you're so much better using the names, using the stories, and asking Kamala Harris why she doesn't care anything about him. How many times you lift up the phone to talk to him, anybody? Have you, besides the Haitians getting whipped that you claimed that you were seeing, instead of a Haitian stealing from another illegal immigrant and a Border Patrol on a horse chasing that person down, and then you condemn that person without knowing the story? That's it. If you could bring up some of these stories, go visit some of the families, I'd say, well, you know what, Trump, you're in trouble, because she seems to know the error of her ways. Even if it is politics, they seem to know, she seems to know what's gone wrong. And what's gone wrong is people have died. And when you say, well, illegal immigrants commit less murder than the average American, one is too many because it's totally unnecessary. They didn't go through the process, the screening process, pass the test, find out their level of loyalty to the country, came in for free. We gave them free stuff, so they don't even understand the value that they got and the break of a lifetime that generations may have received. So when we come back, I will open up the phones. Go to BrianKilmeade.com and write me if you're at work on this Friday. We do know the Prime Minister of Israel is speaking now at the United Nations. Not very popular, but we always have his back. I think he's done a fantastic job. He's also going over last year, October 7th. We're almost a year to the day, and it seems like the rest of the world's gotten over it. Israel will never forget it. Neither will I.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
When I spoke here last year, I said we face the same timeless choice that Moses put before the people of Israel thousands of years ago. As we were about to enter the Promised Land, Moses told us that our actions will determine whether we bequeath to future generations a blessing or a curse. And that is the choice we face today. The curse of Iran's unremitting aggression or the blessing of a historic reconciliation between Arab and Jew.
And that is Prime Minister Netanyahu still conducting that speech at the United Nations. It's anything but traditional. It's anything but retrospective. It is real perspective on what the reality is. And one of the great lines he just gave that we'll play back a little bit later, we're going to a delay, is he just said, we have a seven-front war and we're winning. Last night, they rocketed from the Houthi rebels from Yemen. They knocked down a missile. They're knocking down Hezbollah missiles while at the same time taking out all their higher-ups, killed the top eight in one bomb strike. So many Hezbollah operatives were blown up by the pagers and walkie-talkies and solar panels. Good luck with that. Everybody, Nasrallah should get the message. And some sources told General Keane today that Hezbollah is talking about what it would take for essentially Israel to stop and how far they had to back off. What they have to do is they got to get back to a level that's enforceable, that allows 80,000 people to get back into their homes. Because it's like if you took 8 million Americans and said it's not safe to live in your house. That's why they had to go do what they did to Hezbollah. They're doing two things. Number one, they're getting back in their houses. They can't, as I just mentioned. But number two is there's a sense in the world that Hezbollah is becoming this great terror force, this militia that couldn't be stopped. You got a problem in Syria? I'm sending Hezbollah. You got a problem in Iraq? I'm sending Hezbollah. You have a problem in Afghanistan? I'm sending Hezbollah. Well, what they did is they've overextended. And that group that got its name from holding off the IDF in 2006 is now showing great vulnerability. And most of their leaders are dead. Because of the impeccable intelligence and ability to act quickly that Israel has displayed after an unprovoked attack. And we're coming up almost a complete year. I'm amazed at what they've done. And they're doing it despite constant calls for ceasefire and peace talks with the enemies that put their children into ovens, and behead innocent people who just happen to be going to a concert. I want to put that aside just for a moment, talk a little bit about what's happening in New York. It looks like Eric Adams has been indicted. He'll be arraigned today. And it's going to be humiliating for a sitting mayor to go in there and be arraigned for things that they did, acting as a foreign agent without registering. They say he went to Turkey, Turkish Airlines, and he, instead of going coach, he went first class, put in for coach. They bumped him up. Instead of going to Hampton Inn or Ramada Inn, he ended up in the Four Seasons, paid a fraction of what he should have. In exchange, the only thing that they list that he has done for Turkey is expedite some fire marshal codes that allowed them to move into their new building in Midtown Manhattan. And evidently, they would have failed that fire inspection. Okay, did that. Unable to help in other ways, but he took some, evidently got some, international funds to support his campaign and use straw donors. So you get Billy Jones to donate to you, but it's not Billy Jones's money. It's maybe a Turkish official's money. Is it wrong? Absolutely. Is it wrong to the point where you have a year and a half investigation? You actually examine what he's done for the last 10 years. You take the phones of all his aides. You have five people indicted and then get them to talk, to flip them, to maybe turn on Eric Adams. In terms of the quality of the case, Alan Dershowitz weighed in last night, cut 31.
Well, I think this is going to be a hard case for the government to win. I've litigated lots of these cases, and the courts are reluctant to affirm these kinds of corruption convictions. Adams has picked a very good lawyer, Alex Spiro, a former student of mine, and a brilliant guy who's won a lot of cases. And I think that Adams is already making his defense clear. He sees this as a political issue. He surrounded himself with black leaders today. He is aiming for at least a legal dismissal or perhaps a hung jury. I think he has a good chance of both. As I say, I've litigated a lot of these kind of political corruption cases, and I've gotten reversals, and other people have gotten reversals of these convictions, sometimes dismissal at the trial, sometimes reversal on appeal. But the courts have been looking very skeptically at these broad-based corruption prosecutions.
So there's a few things going on here. You might say, well, Brian, you know, it looks like you did something wrong. Okay. I'm pretty sure there's other officials that are doing the same thing, and I wish they weren't, but they are. Number two is, you know, the first black mayor who tends to be conservative for a Democrat. They're all Democrats. But it's amazing how things change from Eric Adams, the replacing the terrible Mayor de Blasio, who was best friends with Biden. He called him a Biden Democrat. I never even heard people that wanted to embrace Biden, let alone being the Biden Democrat and acting like a disciple. Biden liked him and said, you know what, I'll mentor you and I'll make you in charge of my reelection and make you a surrogate. Well, that quickly went away when he came out and complained, and they said in front of cameras that the federal government is dropping the ball, not providing any money for New York. It's cost us $5.5 billion by the end of 2025, $12.5 billion, and he's had enough. When he did that, Joe Biden took a personal affront, and magically, suddenly, it looks as though that there is an indictment and maybe a conviction. Goodbye, Eric Adams. President Biden has been twice to New York. Now he's been here for 3 days in New York City. Not once did he reach out, call. Did he return a call to Eric Adams? Guess who could be coming into play? According to Axios, Andrew Cuomo, the disgraced former governor, wants back in. He said, the word is, going to Axios' reporting, even before the news broke of New York City Mayor Eric Adams' indictment, Governor Cuomo was already signaling to allies that he was preparing to run for mayor. He's got nothing else to do. He's got a podcast. He testifies in Congress where he changed actual notes and admissions to make himself look good, better than he would if with the nursing home situation, blaming others for doing that. We know about the women problems he was having. But does he have the name recognition since he's a Democrat to win in New York? Would he actually run against Adams? That would be interesting. Can't believe we'd have to deal with Cuomo on a daily basis, that to a mammoth ego. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out how to meet me in Peekskill, October 20th, New York.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. We come to you from 48th and 6th, where no one can drive anywhere, barely even walk down a street, because the UN General Assembly is in town, and Prime Minister Netanyahu is speaking, where, of course, in America, embarrassingly enough, they were protesting in Israel. They were protesting Israel's presence, and they were pro-Hamas. That's pretty much been par for the course, astoundingly, over the last few years. This hour, we're going to be joined by Tommy Lahren. At the bottom of the hour, Danielle Pletka is standing by. So we'll bring you some highlights of Benjamin Netanyahu's speech. But right now, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
They say that there was a quid pro quo where the mayor intervened to speed along a fire inspection approval process for a Turkish consulate. But the mayor can say, look, that's what mayors do. You know, this is a city with a lot of diplomats, and we want to avoid diplomatic problems, including the arrival of the president of that country. So he has defenses.
And you could be talking about that. It's sometimes you need, as a mayor, to travel. Did you need to bump it up to first class, say, at the Four Seasons and do them favors for buildings? Probably not. But does it rise to the occasion of indicting a sitting mayor of the most important city in the country? That's the bigger question. Is politics at play? We'll talk about it.
Number two.
An operator from Ballerias U had exited the Red Barn behind the stage. When shots rang out, he was able to quickly identify where the shots were coming from. And he fired one round at the shooter, which caused the shooter to recoil and briefly fall out of sight. No other rounds were fired by the shooter after he was engaged by the Butler ESU operator.
That was one of the local police officers on the scene in Butler, Pennsylvania, to the site of the assassination and the investigation. They're revealing outrageous errors by the FBI, by the Secret Service, and Iran's threat remains to take out President Trump and others. We'll look at the revelations that have emerged and the stonewalling that's taking place.
Number one.
We are going to the border. We've been to the border. This whole thing about the border, we've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
One of the worst answers to a legitimate question you can imagine for a big-time politician. But that big-time politician has the Democratic nomination. Battle at the border. Harris first to the border since 2021. You see the video? She's wearing a mask outdoors. She stayed for 25 minutes. Now she's going to try to convince the American public she actually cares about it and will be strong on it. And it's Donald Trump that wants it as a campaign issue. President Trump today will be in Michigan later. But first, right now, he is actually meeting with President Zelensky of Ukraine. A lot going on. So glad you're here. Daniel Pletka joins us now, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, host of What the Hell is Going On podcast with Mark Thiessen. Danielle, welcome. I got to take you on the first issue. Vice President Kamala Harris wants to tell everyone she takes the border seriously. Can she pull that off?
I'm not quite sure how. It's not her silly statements about Europe. It's not her word salad stuff. It's the evidence of our own eyes. This is the problem for the Biden-Harris administration. It isn't their efforts to finesse what she was actually called. No, she wasn't a border czar. You know, she was just top chef at, you know, a restaurant in Guatemala for 2 weeks. That's not the problem for her. The problem is that we have a border crisis in this country. We have illegal migrants in cities from New York to Chicago to Texas, Arizona, California, absolutely everywhere. And people see the evidence of their own eyes. That's what she has to address with a real plan. And the fact that she hasn't is not persuasive.
Right. So she's going to try. And Mitch Landrieu, who is a good surrogate to his credit, he was even telling us that Joe Biden was sane and wasn't defailing. Remember that? He quickly pivoted over to be the campaign national co-chair for Harris Waltz. Here's what the message is. You blew it, Donald Trump. Cut three.
On every day that she has been in this race, she has moved ahead and closed the gaps, and she will do this on immigration. She's actually going to the border tomorrow, and I don't think I need to remind you or anybody else once again, we actually negotiated a border bill, the toughest border bill that has ever been negotiated, that Senator Langford, who is a very conservative Republican, led, and the president and vice president were in favor of that. And the only reason why that bill failed is because Donald Trump wanted to use that as a political wedge.
Your thoughts on that argument?
Look, I think there were a lot of other problems with that border bill. There were good things in it, and I think Donald Trump was indeed playing politics in part. But the notion that there were absolutely no problems with that original bill is false. That's number one. And number two, look, you know, if Kamala Harris had gone through a Democratic primary and she had been tested by the Democratic voters and she came up here, I might be willing to say, you know, she's a new candidate. She's the change candidate. But the reality is that she was crowned, something we actually had a revolution for a few years ago. She was crowned the nominee by the Democratic Party, and she has to own the debacle of the Biden-Harris administration. It's great to say the polls are getting better, and I'm sure they are. Mitch Landrieu is a very smooth talker. He's much better candidate, frankly, than he is. But you know, you've got to explain how we got here and how you're going to fix it and how you're going to be different from what you, Kamala Harris, did for the last 3.5 years.
So let's take a look at the polls. Fox News polls came out last night, a two-way matchup, Harris and Trump in Arizona. Harris was at 47. Now she's at 48. Trump was at 50. Now he's at 51. So he's got a slight lead there. Then when it comes to the other poll, they also looked at Georgia. And Trump is trailing by 2 in Georgia. That has got to be concerning because him and Kemp, I've thought, healed their ways and the Kemp ground game is out there. Now, these aren't election results. I'm not talking about that. But it's 50. She was at 50 in August. She's at 51. Trump was at 48 in August. He's at 48 still. Would that alarm you?
know, look, this is going to be a close election. I don't think anybody in the real world has any sense of how this is going to cut one way or the other. We are actually at the first moments where people are really paying attention. The fact that there's early voting where I'm sitting right now in the state of Virginia is a little bit troubling, because people really only start to pay attention, as you know all too well, Brian, starting after Labor Day. So we've had a few weeks of pretty intense campaigning. I don't think we're going to know. I don't think we're going to know at 7 o'clock on election night. I don't think we're going to know at 10 o'clock on election night. This is going to be a tight race because we have two very unpopular candidates.
But, on the surface, even his enemies say Trump has never been more popular. He's more popular now than he was in 2016.
He is very popular, and I think he has a message that people like. Look, you know, you're sitting in New York with all of our friends at the United Nations, all of Hamas lovers and the Hezbollah lovers. I'm sitting here in Washington. You and I are the weird ones. Let me tell you a great story. I came into New York a couple of days ago for a meeting at the United Nations with a foreign leader, and I had an Uber driver. Sweet guy from Pakistan, thick accent. And so we're chatting away, and I said, so who are you voting for? You know, I don't actually think he's an American citizen, but I wanted to know what he thought. And he said, I think Trump. And I said, why? And he said, I just can't afford anything. My family isn't here with me. They're in, you know, upstate New York, and I can't afford to bring them down, and I can't afford an apartment, and I can't afford groceries, and I'm trying to work more hours, but I can't work more hours in the day. To me, that is something that is driving support for Trump. It's not, you know, all of the rhetoric. It's not the back and forth. It's not the silly gimmicks. It's the fact that people are much unhappier mm-hmm. now than they were under the Trump administration.
I don't think there's any doubt about it, especially when you spend 2 years with Joe Biden doing is telling everyone things are great, because people get angry that he's not listening to us. I don't care what the stock market is. I don't care what the unemployment rate is. We're not feeling it. And a lot of it has to do, Danielle, you can't say, unfortunately, I just happened to be at the job when inflation went up. You could actually point to the $7 trillion, the rescue package, the infrastructure package, the Inflation Reduction Act. That's money. Those are trillions of dollars that they chose to put into the system that was strained because of a once in a lifetime and a half pandemic. So you could say, you can't take a bow for this and say, look at how productive I am, and walk away from it when it says, look at how inflation's gone up.
Well, there's a reason why Joe Biden was on track to be defeated ignominiously in the election. There's a reason why. And it wasn't just the fact that he has lost, quote, lost a step, unquote.
Very nice.
It is the fact that the economy is in a very bad place. And even if you want to cite improvements because you're a technical expert at the Federal Reserve or you're the Democratic appointed Secretary of the Treasury, you cannot get past what the Gen Z likes to call people's lived experience. Eggs, milk, life, gas, everything. Housing is so expensive, and people can't take it.
Danielle Pletka with us right now from AEI. So, Danielle, I was out with Dave McCormick on the stump. I just want a day with you. Don't change anything. Just give me a day where I'll have two or three activities. And he did. I don't know if he changed anything, but I got a day that worked. And the first stop he had was a supermarket. And then, you know, 2 days before, Donald Trump was in a supermarket. So someone believes what you believe, because that's not a fun place to be, but it's an accurate place to be, because at one point, everybody is there. And that's where it affects it. And I come from a long line of paycheck to paycheck households. So I know the feeling, because what you do is you don't get what you want to get as much as you're going to get. And what you see is, it's an interesting thing. They say, what is Donald Trump going to do to affect things? And he said, I just don't want to slow down inflation. I want to get prices down. And he's not wrong in saying it really starts and could end with energy. If you start maximizing energy in this country, exporting at a big rate in this country, it's going to affect the delivery. It's going to affect the trucks. It's going to affect the people. It's going to affect what they're paying at the gas pump. More money could be coming in and prices could be coming down. If you just commit to allowing these energy companies, natural gas, oil and gas, to do what they do.
look, I think that that's an enormously important factor. And it's not just an enormously important factor for the inputs that you're talking about, whether it's getting your tomatoes or your eggs or your milk to that supermarket. And it is a factor in your daily life. If you're driving to work, you know, Americans more than almost anybody in the world get in their car and they drive to work. And it is painful to have to fill up your gas tank. When people are making choices about what to deny their children because they can't afford things, you need to fix it. But Brian, I don't know if you saw the lead editorial in the Wall Street Journal today. It's Harris released an economic plan, and the Wall Street Journal says it's 82 pages of spending, more taxes, more regulation, and more government. That's not going to end the problem that we face today.
She's got to fire the person that wrote it, because I'm sure she has no idea what's in it. I've never seen anyone speak. I'm not saying she's not smart. It has nothing to do with it. But she speaks in a sense where she has no idea what the next word is. And it's because it's as if you asked me to talk about chemistry, you would think that I was a stutterer. Even though I'm very comfortable on the microphone and on television, whether you like me or not, I don't really know anything about chemistry. If you want me to talk about mechanics and fixing your car, I'd sit there and they go, you'd say, that guy's terrible. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And they would be right. That's what I get the sense of. Outside the law, I feel as though she hasn't even put the time in to understand how she feels about things.
Well, look, that was always the rap on her. I think she did a good job at the only debate that she had with Donald Trump. But the reason she did a good job is she's a former prosecutor, and she went in and she learned her lines. But the rap on Kamala Harris for the last 3.5 years is that she doesn't do her homework, that she doesn't look at what her staff is producing. And if I look at the people around her, they are even more left-wing than Joe Biden's staff. If I look at the people around her and I say to myself, Kamala Harris isn't a thinker, she's a follower, I worry where her people are going to take this country, and I worry about that every day.
What a great line. And you're going to be on One Nation this weekend, and I'm bringing you to that. And that's true, because people want to say dumb, smart, you know, fast, slow. It's not the matter of that. It's like what you feel. There's certain people who run for office. They have a vision. And catch up to them and elect them. If you elect them, you better find out what they're going to do. Other people just want the office. They don't really care what happens when they're there. Trump is somebody that said, this is what I'm doing. I'm not, you know, I love power and whatever you want. Likes being. He really wants to, as an agenda to put forward. Barack Obama, I think, had an agenda put forward. George W. Bush did. He had to change it after 9/11. But on Ukraine, I think we're on the same page. I'm on the same page as Mark Thiessen. I am not on the same page when it comes to slow walking the weapons. I do see the importance of the war, but it was a big mistake, I thought, this week for Zelensky to take a ride on a government plane with Democrats only, with a governor of a Democratic governor, and sign those weapons in Scranton. And I thought that was a political mistake, and hopefully you can fix it with Trump right now.
So Mark and I are going to be on with you tomorrow, and we're really looking forward to it. But let me tell you what the backstory there was. First of all, you are 100% right that that was a mistake. But it wasn't a mistake that Zelensky committed. He didn't even know before he got on that plane. This trip had been organized entirely by the White House. And what the White House did is they cynically manipulated this trip. None of those people, Casey, none of the senators were supposed to be part of that trip. The only person who was supposed to be there for a hot minute was Josh Shapiro, because he was signing a sister city agreement with a town in Ukraine. Instead, the White House piled in all of these political people, turned it into a political trip. And, you know, look, again, should he have been sharper? Should he maybe even have gotten off the plane? Well, you know, he's not going to do that. But the White House, it just shows how little the White House really cares about Ukraine. If they want to build a bipartisan consensus, they do not use the president to manipulate the American people in order to score political points, right? That is just a disgrace. And they got used.
They did. And it works against people like the Speaker of the House that's trying to sell his right-wing caucus on the need for it. Daniel Pletka, thanks so much. Trump and Zelensky meeting and speaking. We'll give you the latest next. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Dynamic situation. I got to give Zelensky credit. You heard Daniel Pletka talk about what happened during the week, and he says Zelensky shouldn't have been blamed. Democrats put him with all Democrats, made it a partisan effort, which shows you the sincerity in which, in tongues in cheek, they're approaching the Ukraine war and their victory that has to happen over Russia. They made it all and made it a big political event. Zelensky was in the middle. So what he did is text President Trump, and President Trump put it on Truth Social and said, listen, essentially, we've been friends for a long time. Let's meet. I know I tried to meet with you. I couldn't get a hold of you. You weren't able to do it. Can we meet before I leave? I'm in New York. You know what he said? Yes. So Trump met him. They're about to have a meeting now. They just met with the press. When we come back, we'll let you hear some of that. Right around the corner, Tommy Lahren will be on, and we'll get her opinion. A lot of people on the right think we just walk away from Ukraine, that it's a corrupt country, and Zelensky's, I guess, short, and people don't like that. So I feel differently. I think they fight like warriors. I think they'd be a huge asset to NATO, even if it takes some time. I think that if they have to end, and if it ends up giving up some land, they should take some land, too. Say, hey, we're holding on to Kursk, right? We took it, got 500 square miles of Russia. We'll keep that. Unless you give some of the Donbass back. And then we see what happens. And then we promise security. Only for real. Not with words. We promised last time that if you gave up the nuclear weapons, we would provide security. They gave up the nuclear weapons, and we allowed Crimea to be taken, the Donbass to be taken, and the invasion to take place.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And I also have a very good relationship, as you know, with President Putin. And I think if we win, I think we're going to get it resolved very quickly. Very quickly. I really think we're going to get it resolved.
I hope we have more good relations.
We're going to have. Oh, I see. Yeah. But, you know, it takes two to tango, you know. And
what did he say? Did you hear that? Did he say we have more good relations? President Zelensky and President Trump meeting impromptu in front of the cameras at Trump Tower before they go to their meeting one-on-one. Zelensky texted him yesterday, said, we're having trouble hooking up a meeting. Let's just do it before I leave New York. And Trump said, fine. And one of the things he indicated is, hey, look, we've always been friends. Let's just I don't want you to think I'm playing politics. And it's a little bit of damage control after he flew out to Pennsylvania and met with Governor Shapiro. But you heard Daniel Pletka come out and explain exactly what happened. That was really, he was duped by Democrats into doing that. That he was supposed to go out there and he was supposed to sign a sister city agreement with Governor Shapiro, Pennsylvania, and one over and some city in Pennsylvania and some city in Ukraine. And then it turned into more. With me right now is Tommy Lahren, Outkick.com. You see her everywhere all over the channel. Tommy, welcome back.
Good to be with you. And I'll tell you, every time I see Zelensky on my screen, I feel the American people getting a little bit poorer, Brian, because every time he comes, we send him a little bit more money. And maybe I'm the only one that's irritated by this. But when you're meeting with a former president or you're meeting with congressional leaders, is it too much to ask that Zelensky maybe dresses the part? Maybe that's just my personal pet peeve. But when I see him in his sweatsuit and I know how much money the United States has given Ukraine, it just personally bothers me to see that. Maybe I'm alone in that, Brian, but it bothers me.
I know. Certain people like that. I think the guy's at war. And I think when the war's over, I think he gets in a suit and he looks great, you know. But I think he's in a brutal war. I think they have fought great. The Ukraine has fought with great valor. I think it's an invasion that was unprovoked. He thought he'd have a quick win 2 years later. It's bleeding out Russia, but it's really hurting Ukraine. I think it's sending a good message to the rest of the world. You can't go invade and take back your countries. We're not going to let you reassemble the Soviet Union.
Well, it depends on who the we is. I think Donald Trump wouldn't allow that to happen. And I think if Donald Trump were president, there would never have been the small incursion that became the actual invasion. Because, of course, Biden administration simply saying don't to all of these aggressive nations clearly didn't get the job done. Not so sure a Kamala Harris presidency would send any different message from what Biden sent. But, you know, she's trying to make herself appear as though she's got foreign policy acumen. I'm not so sure she's convinced anybody. But I am happy that Kamala is finally making her second trip to the border. We've got three interviews and two trips to the border, I guess, under her belt. And I suppose that's supposed to make us feel comfortable with her leadership capability.
So I want you to hear President Trump yesterday, cut 7.
I will end catch and release, and I will restore, remain in Mexico. I'm going to tell Mexico, thank you very much. You're putting it back right away. You're putting it back, and they will do it, too, when I tell them. I will bring back Title 42. I will send a federal law enforcement, large group of people, but a tough group of people, to liberate Aurora, Colorado.
And Aurora's really going down. They do have that huge gang problem there. They're all over New York City. They're all over Chicago. They are harassing. They are making a presence felt in small towns in Pennsylvania. So the president outlined 10, 15 things he was going to do, and is just astounded that Vice President Harris is going to the border. But, Tommy, you're someone who understands the practicality of it. All she needs is maybe take a point or two from his advantage on immigration. Don't you agree? And that's her goal? She knows she's never going to really pass it for the majority of the American people. She's not going to pass the test where people think she's strong in the border. But if they take a point or two from President Trump there, that might help her get Arizona.
She wants to make people believe that it won't be so bad. I don't think, as to your point, that anyone thinks she's going to be tough on the border, but they want people to think that maybe she'll be okay on the border. But what really irritates me is every time she does talk about the border, she says two things on repeat from her list of talking points: that she was a prosecutor and she prosecuted transnational gangs. Okay. And then two, that she'll sign the bipartisan border deal. Well, neither of those things deal with the 10 million plus people that we have in this country. And the only thing we've heard on that is that she wants a pathway to citizenship. I haven't heard her say that she will deport a single one of the illegal aliens that came across the border. I haven't heard her say anything about the temporary protected status that she's offered to hundreds of thousands ever expiring. So for those in communities that are really upset that their communities are being overtaken, she will do nothing to solve that problem, and she has nothing on her talking points that even addresses that besides a pathway to citizenship. That should make American voters very anxious.
All right. I 100% agree, and I think you should have done the debate for President Trump. Had so many open shots to go explain that. And if they would open up the microphones, maybe engage her on that. And guess what else is rotting in the middle of the desert? It is the border wall we paid for and the construction company we've already paid for to work, and they're not working. If she actually had a revelation, if she had a friend get killed, God forbid, because of a illegal immigrant, says, I've changed my mind, the first thing it would do is start putting up that wall. And remember, they're afraid now to talk about being against deportation because 60% of the country is for it. They're afraid right now to put down the wall because 58% of the country is now for it. It's amazing, Tommy, how many issues have come back around to the president. Not that popular in 2016, very popular in 2024, including sanctuary cities, getting rid of them.
Right, which needs to happen. But on the border wall, I've seen pieces of that border wall rotting, by the way. I've seen it firsthand. But I would also say you can build a wall, and I want us to finish the wall. But if the Harris administration is still dedicated to flying hundreds of thousands of people into the country over the wall, you could build that wall as tall as you want. You could put a moat of alligators around it, and it wouldn't matter. And she hasn't told us, and Bill Malusian was great on asking the campaign about this, are you going to continue to fly these people into the country? And her campaign will not answer.
She won't. So let's talk about the state of the race. You know, I can go into state by state and talk. We know about the big seven battleground states that he needs. We know that he's up in Arizona, but in the latest Fox poll, he's trailing by 2 or 3 in Georgia. And then you have a situation in Pennsylvania, which is basically a tie, 2 or 3 points in Michigan. And you wonder if Virginia is indeed in play. I want you to hear, before I get your analysis, this is what I think some of the fact. Matt Towery brought this up yesterday with Sean Hannity about the state of the campaign. Cut 12.
The Trump campaign needs to get the old Republicans, the ones who helped him in 2016, and bring them back on board to generate that grassroots Republican
who
excitement.
Are you talking
They're getting
about?
Other folks around. Oh, I would say
who
in Georgia, for example. No one specifically, but I'm saying that I talk to political folks who are elected officials and the like. They don't feel as engaged as they could be. And I think that's needed to get people to turn out. And that's even though you have a Brian Kemp, say, in Georgia, Brian Kemp's not actively involved in this campaign. So you got to get people on the ground who can actually turn out those loyal Republicans.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I think we need to get as many Republicans registered to vote and planning to vote as possible. But I guess I disagree that we necessarily need the establishment Republicans or the never Trumpers. I think the never Trumpers are never going to vote for Trump. And I think those that are Republican that don't really like Trump, they're probably still going to vote for Trump because the alternative is so disastrous. But I think that's what the Trump campaign strategically needs to do. Make it less about Trump. Make it more about Kamala. Let Kamala talk as much as possible. Force her into doing more interviews with MSNBC, more town halls with Oprah Winfrey, because every time we hear from Kamala, it doesn't bode well for her. So make it more about Kamala, less about Trump, and I think people will be so terrified by what a Kamala Harris presidency would look like that they're going to have to go out and vote for Trump just for self-preservation.
So, Tommy, what worries you most from – you want Trump to win, right?
I think that that's pretty obvious.
So yes. What worries you most from the Trump perspective?
What worries me most, I suppose, is a gender gap. I really think that he needs to do something to address that. And Donald Trump simply saying he's going to be the biggest protector of women and great for reproductive rights, I don't think that that's going to cut it. I think he has to do more, and he has to talk about crime more, and he has to talk about, you know, affordability, because most women are the purchasers of groceries and other items for their families. He needs to talk more to women about those issues that they care about, because this is probably going to be kind of a boys versus girls election. He's doing fine with men. He needs to do better with women.
Well, so what about people in your age bracket? They have questions?
They do, and I think that there's this kind of a miscalculation that Gen Z or millennials are all in for Kamala. They're not. They're open and they're swayable voters. They need to get out and vote. And I think that part of that's going to be Donald Trump reminding them if they want to afford a house, they want to afford maybe to take a vacation once a year, that they're going to need to get their economy back. And they could have done that 4 years ago. They can't do it now. Start talking to Gen Z. Start talking to millennials. Don't just assume that they're going to vote for Kamala.
So, Tommy, I want to throw this at you. I watched the whole hearing yesterday with the assassination investigation. Eli Crane is one of this nation's premier snipers. I wanted to hear from him. I wanted to see what he said, because I know he's been working hard on this. I want to get your response, because already the Trump campaign's been affected. They told him he can't have an outdoor rally in Wisconsin over the weekend. This is already election interference. Because of Iran, because of the other attempts, because Secret Service has got to worry about the UN and the General Assembly and protecting the president of Iran. Listen to what Eli Crane said, the congressman from Arizona.
What is going to happen next time if there is a 10-man Hezbollah team, snipers, assaulters, and drone operators launching coordinated and overlapping assassination attempt on the president? I think we can all see by now that their likelihood of success would be tremendous. My suggestion to the former president and to his campaign is that he beef up his private security detail of individuals who are loyal to him.
And he went on to say, you got to go get the private guys. The guys that were watching Karzai, Gahani, the Iraqi leaders, they're here. They're in their 30s. They're retired, because being a Navy SEAL is like being a running back in the NFL. You're all beat up, but you're ready. You're still talented and you're experienced. How do you feel about that? Should he go to that length?
He has to. He needs to get private security. And I hope that the Secret Service will make some changes, but it might not be fast enough. They might not ever have the resources to protect somebody like Donald Trump. He's got the money and the resources to do it. Obviously, his life and the lives of his family members are of the utmost importance. So I think exactly right. Go out, get your own private security. There's a lot of patriots out there that would love to protect the former president. So I think that's exactly what he has to do at this point, because otherwise, he's going to have to be in a bubble, and he's not going to be able to campaign. And if he were to be elected, I still think he needs private security. I mean, this is the most wanted man on the face of the earth. He needs to do something else than what he's currently doing.
All right. Outkick.com. When do we hear you? When do we see you?
Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern.
All right. On Outkick.com, right?
Yes.
All right. Go get him, Tommy. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, and stay within yourself. 1-866-408-7669. I see all the lines filled up. I'll try to get to them. If you prefer to write, if you're at work and you don't want to let anyone know that the AirPod you're listening to is not enhancing your job performance, but you're listening to me, write me, BrianKilmeade.com.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Brian Kilmeade Show. See all the calls up there. I'll try to get to a few of them. But I think it's time to find out if there's a need to know more while watching all the other breaking news. Well, first it, we watched it live on our show. Our Fox weather team, this woman was trapped in a car. And she was he was doing a live report, and you hear screaming in the background. He yells over to her that, I'm going to get you. I called 911, and then realized she was panicking. He had to go put down the mic and get her. Listen to this story right now.
Yeah, I got you. I got you loud and clear. And you can see right here, we've got this this lady drove into the area that's flooded out, and she's screaming right now. I just called 911. Fire department is coming in, but she drove right into the floodwaters. This is the Peachtree Creek, and it is rising at the moment. We've got this thing cresting at about 23 feet. It's going to go up a little bit more. This, by the way, we had the video of the high water rescues earlier. That was about a mile away from this spot where I am right now. So people are still driving around and seeing all these floodwaters and still going around the barriers of getting in. So I am patiently waiting for 911 to come. They said the fire department was coming from Atlanta. I'm in North Atlanta right now on the corner of Northside Street, Northside Drive. It's pretty big populated area right here. She is still screaming, but we got you. We got you. 911, they're coming. You're good. You're good. Oh, man, it's a situation. We will get back to you in a little bit. I'm going to go see if I can help this lady out a little bit more, you guys. I'll be
and
back.
That was Bob Van Dillen reporting live with us on Fox and Friends this morning. He went and got the woman out of the car. He pulled her out. You saw this, Allison?
I did. I saw it. And then they, I feel like he was trying to do the right thing by calling 911. You just hear this woman keep on calling. And as he was reporting it to you guys, I feel like you saw him being like, wait, she still needs help. They're not here yet. Like, we're going to just keep on filming while she needs help. And he then did the right thing. It was quite the moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little dangerous because he had to walk up to his waist and pull her out the window. And it was great, though. I think he had to do it. And he saved her. And then he came back and told us the story, and we all have it all on tape. Next, Hoda is leaving. She announces departure from the Today Show after 17 years. Listen.
I have some news. So I was doing the math, and I realized that I have spent 26 years at NBC. Be cool. 26 years at NBC, 16 years on the 10, and 7 years with you. And I just turned 60, and it was such a monumental moment for me when I turned 60 years old, because I started thinking about that decade. Like, what does that decade mean? What does it hold? What's it going to have for me? And I realized that it was time for me to turn the page at 60 and to try something new. And I think I realized it. This was so crazy, but remember our 60th birthday that we had outside? It was so, I can see it. And I remembered standing outside looking at this beautiful bunch of people with all these gorgeous signs. And I thought, like, this is what the top of the wave feels like for me. And I thought, it can't get better. And I decided that this is the right time for me to kind of move on.
She's going to get a podcast.
She's going to stay at NBC. She's staying in the NBC family. She's still going to be doing other things. She's just not going to have to work five mornings a week.
So she worries. She doesn't want to work as much. She doesn't. It's not that she wants to try something else.
Yeah, maybe just like not doing the morning show every day. As you know, like, it stops you from possible other opportunities when you need to be in the same location every morning. You can't travel as much. You can't maybe do like bigger packages and things. She also has two young daughters, right? So, you know, she could be around more to send them off to school and things like that.
Oh, look, I've only met her three or four times. Couldn't be nicer. She goes to Sirius also and does a radio show. I'm not sure every day, but she does a radio show after. You know, it's so interesting. I saw this video of David Letterman, who used to when he was at his show, he used to make fun of people on NBC. And he's like, who's Hoda? And he made fun of this woman's name. She was a New Orleans local anchor. That's who knew that she'd emerge as a national personality. Who, actually, they say, in looking back at her career, Kathy Lee and her is when her personality really came out. When that show that followed the Today Show.
Yeah, because they were drinking wine at 10 a.m. and having fun. And Kathy Lee is such, like, a lovely human. She sort of brings out the best in people.
Right. I agree with you. I just wish you'd find religion.
Yes.
I'm just saying that I think she should understand the Bible matters.
Go back and listen to our former interview with her a few weeks back.
Yes, I think she's educating. She's edging the authors of the Bible on the Bible. I'm pretty sure. Brian Kilmeade Show. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Now I'm going to be. We have a new appearance. Stage show is going to be in Jacksonville and Peekskill, New York, October 20th.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Welcome to the latest moments of the big show. So glad you're here. This hour, we're going to be joined by Ambassador Michael Oren. Prime Minister Netanyahu has just finished his speech about a half hour ago at the UN. It was fiery. It was to the point. It was delivered with great passion, as usual. But, man, what a difference a year makes. Last year, we were talking about the Abraham Accords and expanding them. Is this an era of peace? Is Saudi Arabia going to be next to join the recognition train? And now, after October 7th, things have changed so dramatically. But it's pretty obvious who the problem is. It's not a lot of Arab countries. It's not all the Arab countries. It's not anti-Semitism in the Middle East. It is just Iran. Shannon Bream at the bottom of the hour. So let's bring in Ambassador Michael Oren. Ambassador, welcome back.
Good to be back, Brian. Thank you.
What'd you take away from the Prime Minister's address today?
Always a powerful speech. He's the greatest orator of this century, certainly. And, you know, masterfully put together. There's a couple of questions. Who's listening? In America right now, as you know, the press attention is very much focused on Hurricane Helene. It's focused in New York City on the indictment of the mayor. And of course, the presidential race all the time. So this is, you know, that this speech is not going to be at the major headline. The message to get through is difficult. You know, Brian, I've spent some time in Washington last week. I was in the White House last week. I was on the Hill, and I got to say, I've never experienced anything remotely like this. Here we have a situation where Israel has been the victim of unprovoked aggression by Hezbollah in Iran. For more than 11 months, you know, 100,000 Israelis have been driven from their home, thousands of homes destroyed, dozens of people killed, 70,000 acres of farmland, forest put up in smoke. And when Israel goes to defend itself, we have no support. We have no support from the world community, frankly, no real support from Washington. And right now, the tremendous pressure on Israel to agree to a 21-day ceasefire. That ceasefire only helps Hezbollah. There's no way it helps Israel. There's no way that gets Hezbollah to move away from the northern border so that Israelis can turn home. There's no way that guarantees that at the end of 21 days, Hezbollah won't open fire again. So we're in a very, very difficult situation where it seems like nothing we can do to defend ourselves will be regarded as legitimate.
Everybody could see who the good guys are. Everyone knows who wants this war. It's Iran. Everyone knows who's fighting. It's Islamic Jihad, Hamas, and Hezbollah. And Hezbollah has been rocketing you since October 8th. Hamas started on October 7th. So you took action. Here's the Prime Minister today.
Iran's aggression, if it's not checked, will endanger every single country in the Middle East and many, many countries in the rest of the world, because Iran seeks to impose its radicalism well beyond the Middle East. That's why it funds terror networks on five continents. That's why it builds ballistic missiles for nuclear warheads to threaten the entire world. For too long, the world has appeased Iran. It turns a blind eye to its internal repression. It turns a blind eye to its external aggression. Well, that appeasement must end, and that appeasement must end now. Nations of the world should support the brave people of Iran who want to rid themselves of this evil regime. Responsible governments should not only support Israel in rolling back Iran's aggression, they should join Israel. They should join Israel in stopping Iran's nuclear weapons program.
So, obviously, you don't feel that's an obvious urging to do the right thing, but you don't feel as the world understands this.
Every word is truth. Every word he just said, the Prime Minister, is incised in stone. Absolute truth. The question is, who's listening? And the Prime Minister, since the 1990s, has been warning about the Iran nuclear program.
over and over again. And what we see, on the contrary to the world standing up to Iran, we see the world paying off Iran. We see the world collaborating with Iran. And when Israel tries to defend itself against Iran and its proxies, we're condemned as war criminals. I mean, this operation that was attributed to Israel, we don't take responsibility for it, with the pagers and the walkie-talkies, literally the most precise anti-terror operation in human history, being condemned by former CIA Director Leon Panetta as a form of terrorism. Princeton professor Michael Walzer, who was actually my professor, calling it a war crime. I mean, so you want to ask these individuals, what exactly can Israel do to defend itself right. against Iran, a country that is determined to destroy us? What could we do that could be legitimate other than just sitting there and getting rocketed day after day until we run out of interceptors?
Until you run out of people, because no one wants to live under that. You're losing a lot of very smart people who say, I can't get anything done. I can't work. 80,000 people forced off the border. To your point, Sky News headline, Hezbollah has been provoked like never before by Israel and may be tempted to unleash its firepower. Really? They quickly deleted it. New York Times, Iran has so far refused to be goaded by Israel into a larger regional war with what its Supreme Leader Khamenei clearly does not want.
That assumes that we want to goad them into a war. It's just what we want is a war with Iran, right? And, you know, the IDF estimate for an actual all-out war would be something like being hit by 10,000 rockets a day. And it's not just from the Hezbollah. It's from the pro-Iranian militias in Syria and Iraq, the Houthi rebels in the south who fired a rocket at Tel Aviv this week. And Iran itself, which on April 14th fired 350 rockets at us. That's just the war we want. That's really that. We just wake up in the morning, we want this war, according to the New York Times. No, but we will defend ourselves. And we're not, as right. you know, the prime minister at the end of his speech quoted, paraphrased Dylan Thomas by saying, we're not going to go quietly into that dark night. We're going to rage against the ending of the light. We're not. We're not going to do that. But the question is, who will support us?
Ambassador, could you tell me right now, is it true that Nasrallah has sent people out to talk about what it would take to stop it? I mean, have you got his attention?
Oh, I think we got the attention. I don't think Hezbollah wants the war either. They don't want the war.
But they
got
to let you guys go back into the northern part of your country.
Yeah, but they won't do that because diplomacy in the world, including American diplomacy, has managed to maneuver a situation which, you know, 50 years from now, historians will scratch their head. How is it that the keys to war and peace in the region and maybe the world are in the hands of one madman, Yahya Sinwar, sitting in a tunnel somewhere in Gaza? Because if Yahya Sinwar sets a ceasefire, then Nasrallah says he'll accept a ceasefire. But guess what? Sinwar doesn't want a ceasefire. He wants a war between Israel and Hezbollah, which will draw the Israeli army out of Gaza and put even more pressure on Israel internationally. That's what he wants. He wants a war. So it's an extraordinary situation. And as long as Israel is fighting in Gaza, and we have to keep fighting in Gaza, Nasrallah and Hezbollah will keep shooting at the north. And how do we then break this cycle? How do we break the situation? You do it by convincing Hezbollah that it's not a good idea to attack us, convincing Iran that it's not a good attack us, and hopefully convincing the United States to back us in this. Because right. I want to say this unequivocally, Brian. If radical Islam wins in this war, Europe is next and ultimately America is next.
Look at London. I mean, do you see what's going on in London? And this mayor is educating America. You better not elect Donald Trump. And he has let London go to hell. No one even recognizes London because of a wild immigration that has taken place there. So I want you to hear. So all we talk about is ceasefire. And it's for, in my view, it's for election purposes. Here is John Kirby yesterday.
What we want to see is no all-out war between Israel and Lebanon. If the goal is to get the families back to their homes, get businesses back up in those kibbutzes and villages, we believe that a war is not the best way to do that, that there should be, can be, and ought to be time and space for a diplomatic solution here, and we're going to continue to work on it. They have every right to eliminate those terrorist threats, but again, we believe there's time and space for diplomacy. The president talked about that earlier today, and we're going to continue to try to pursue that.
What's your answer to that?
Okay, let's unpack that. I have great respect for John Kirby. really. But let's unpack it. Say we get 21 days where there's no fighting, but Hezbollah gets a chance to reorganize, to catch its breath. Remember, they've been knocked off their balance. All right. And during those 21 days, Israelis are still not going to go back to their homes. And so there's going to be diplomacy. What's the diplomacy? It's a chance to convince Hezbollah to retroactively implement UN Resolution 1701 from the year 2006. Now, 1701 called for Hezbollah to withdraw north of the Litani River. It's about 20 miles from our border. And Hezbollah in 2006 said, yeah, yeah, yeah. The next day, they were right up against the fence again. Right. And so now the United States is supposed to have leverage to convince Hezbollah to retreat under fire 20 miles from the border and then to assure that that agreement will be preserved. With what force, we don't know. Right? Are American soldiers going to patrol our northern border? Is that what they're going to do? So you got to ask that question. Yeah, room for diplomacy, but what chance does diplomacy have of succeeding? Mm-hmm. And if it fails, then at the end of 21 days,
right,
the only people who have gained from the 21 days are Hezbollah.
Ambassador, I hear you. Ambassador Michael Oren is with us. But, Ambassador, I know you're not going to you're going to tell me about war plans now, and you're not in the habit of commanding the IDF. Mm-hmm. But it's no secret. Evidently, your elite brigades are getting ready to go in if asked. It's not going to be a big stretch. Even after 2006, how tough it would be in that terrain, are you still thinking about doing that? Do you feel as though, is the information you have, there's been so much damage done from the pager, the walkie-talkies, the solar panels, the blowing up of eight Hezbollah leaders, has so much damage been done? Do you think there might be vulnerability to make real progress in wiping out Hezbollah?
Well, I don't think the goal is to wipe out Hezbollah. It's very different than the goal in Gaza. The goal in Gaza was to destroy Hamas and get our hostages back. We can't destroy Hezbollah, but we can drive them back from the border. There are no hostages there. So it's a very different situation. Now, you're talking to me. I'm a veteran of not one but two Lebanon wars. I mean, you don't want to fight in Lebanon. It's horrible terrain, and it's their home turf, not ours. And Hezbollah is a very serious military force. It's bigger than many of the armies in the world. And they're dug in, and they're waiting. And it will be a very brutal battle. And I would hope that most of that battle would be fought not on the ground, but in the air, constant bombing of southern Lebanon and moving them away from the border. But at the end of the day, and this is crucial to understand, and the vast majority of Israelis understand this, we have no choice. That the status quo ante of October 6th, where Hezbollah was right up against the fence, and now we know what terrorists will do to families on our side of the fence, mm-hmm. No families will go back. So those 100,000 people aren't going back. We will lose the northern part of Israel, the tiny country. You lose the north, you lose the whole country. So it's an existential situation. When Netanyahu says in the UN that we're fighting for our survival, we are fighting for our survival. And as rough as this war will be, and it would be brutal if we went on the ground, we really have no choice, and Israelis understand that.
Are you worried about the U.S. starting to slowly cut you off if Vice President Harris wins?
Cut us off? I don't know. Yesterday she said in an interview that the United States has leverage over Israel by withholding arms. She said this. I'm not saying anything by partisan here. And so that's got to be – it's got to be a concern. I mean, I personally have – for years now, I was in government. I was a deputy to the prime minister in his office. I've been pressing for more independence for Israel in terms of ammunition production and not be dependent on anybody else precisely for this reason.
So that is a worry then. I mean, I'm just reading back, Reagan's had problems, Bush has had problems. You got whoever, Menachem Begin, Shamir, whoever. There's always been a little push and pull, a little bit of tension between allies. I don't think that's unusual. But but there's a lack of follow through. And what you say publicly, we understand Israel has a right to defend itself. But they don't go ahead and just want a ceasefire. They don't say what kind of ceasefire would work. That wouldn't get us right back to where we were within 9 months or peace deal.
Right.
They have to be, there's got to be some observation. There's got to be some Israeli IDF presence on the border of Egypt or right through the middle of Gaza. And Hezbollah's got to go through a certain line where you can have a chance of a coexistence.
Yeah, I'm a practitioner of diplomacy. And in the White House last Friday, I heard that the United States is going to stick with us in spite of tactical differences. They're always going to have our back. And I do believe that. There are going to be some serious tensions, as you mentioned. By the way, the first person to withhold military supplies from Israel was Ronald Reagan in response to Menachem Begin's decision to bomb the Iraqi nuclear reactor in 1981. Reagan withheld the supply of fighter jets for a while. So, yeah, there's going to be periods like that. It's true. But what I'd like to see now, say the Americans come to us and say, okay, 21 days. I would like to see on a piece of paper saying at the end of 21 days, if we do not achieve an agreement, we are going to back you 100%, and not only defensively, we're going to defend you offensively. If anybody shoots at us, you're going to have to deal with – Israel is going to have to deal with us too. What is the quid pro quo here?
Right.
But just to say 21 days without saying that, what happens at the end of the 21 days, that's a non-starter. That serves the interest of Hezbollah and Hezbollah only.
I hear you. Ambassador, it's got to be frustrating. You're doing the right thing. You know, I know Trump would do a much better job at watching Israel's back. He's very black and white like that. But I know you can't do it because you have to be relatively diplomatic. Ambassador Michael Oren, thanks so much.
Thanks, man. Have a quiet weekend. Thank you.
You too. 1-866-408-7669. I see you out there in Orlando. See you over there in upstate New York, over in New York City. We'll be with you in a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back. Got a couple of minutes here. Let's go to the phones. David, you're in New Jersey. Hey, David.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. As someone that served our republic honorably for 5 years in the Navy, I was curious to hear what specifically did the United States Congress promise Ukraine? That was a gentleman's agreement by kinder, gentler George Herbert Walker and the Ukrainian people. And
well, I don't have the vax. I don't know your vax text in front of me, David, but they said if you give up nuclear weapons, Russia and the U.S. will watch your back and your borders, right? And they did.
They is the U.S. Congress or the U.S. president. What I'm getting at is the Berlin Wall came down in 89. What assurances do we have that if the Warsaw Pact has been disintegrated since 1991,
right.
1990, what exactly is the end result here? The United States has been invaded by over 20 million illegal aliens, and we're worried about a continent that, in my estimation, doesn't deliver the bill. There are only four countries in NATO that pay the bill: the United States of America, the United Kingdom, Poland,
no, 21,
and Greece.
They're up to 21.
Oh, they pay all. They pay the 2% of their gross domestic
up to 21. I just interviewed the Secretary of NATO. General Secretary,
including Germany.
There's five more countries that have not got to the 2%, which is pretty amazing considering
they
when
have
he took.
Not
when,
gotten
can
two.
I can
they
I finish, David?
Not gotten two.
David,
not gotten
when
two.
He took over 10 years ago, there were three. Now there's 21. Benjamin in Australia. Hey, Benjamin.
Yeah, hi Brian. You know, like you, I like Donald Trump a lot, but I'm not convinced about his foreign policy, and I just cannot see how he's going to, you know, wave the magic wand in Ukraine, because that place is not going back. Like, Germany, their economy is tanking. You know, they're not getting gas from Russia. They're still going to China and India. I don't think Trump can fix Ukraine. You know,
Ukraine will get rebuilt. They just got to stop the war, and they got to do it in a way that gets their territory back the most as possible. Because they're doing a smart thing. They're taking Russian territory, so they have something to deal now.
Breaking news. Unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you read this indictment, it's very interesting. There's a real question of, is there anything there? I mean, we're talking about flight upgrades, hotel rooms in exchange for trying to hurry through or get the fire marshal to approve a permit. So, you know, if you read the whole story, it seems to me that this does reek of politics, that this does look like that Eric Adams spoke out a year ago criticizing the Biden administration.
That is Matt Whitaker, former acting district attorney general, took over when Senator Sessions hit the road. Talking about the indictment, which is 57 pages of Eric Adams. An investigation has gone on for over a year. It's been very public, taking his phones, raiding Gracie Mansion. And you wonder, what's going on here? How bad is this? That did he actually sell New York City back to the American Indians? I'm not sure. What's going on here? And then people look at it. They're professional legal experts and saying, I'm not sure that this is worthy of the journey. And there's opportunity to fight back. Shannon Bream joins us now, anchor of Fox News Sunday, Fox News chief legal analyst. Shannon, big agenda. Were you as struck as I was by what that indictment contained, as today is the day that he has to turn himself in?
Yeah, I mean, it's, as you talked about, it's far-reaching. It goes way back and talks about all kinds of things. And when we started to hear we're talking about travel upgrades and this kind of stuff, then you start to dig a little bit and say, like, okay, I thought we were talking about bags of cash, you know, gold bars a la Senator Menendez and those allegations. It's something very different than I thought probably it would be at first blush. So, listen, he's going to have to answer these questions. But I don't know that somebody in his position for, you know, some luxury travel or upgrades would be willing to do something that could potentially land him in jail and be the end of his mayoral run. You know, he's pretty defiant. So we have a country in which you get due process and innocent until proven guilty, unless proven guilty. And he's anxious to get into the court system and hash it out.
He's got indicted on conspiracy to commit wire fraud, solicitation of contribution of a foreign national twice. Bribery is the other count. Overall, he is arraigned on federal charges selling his influence to foreign nationals. Specifically, it's Turkey. Turkish Airlines that brought him to different locations, everywhere from China on down. You get on, you pay for a coach ticket, you get upgraded to first class. You pay for an economic hotel, and next thing you know, you're in the Four Seasons. When they want a favor, they want fire marshal certification by the time the foreign minister comes here, and they get it, even though it's not supposed to pass inspection in New York City. So, all right, that's a reason not to vote for him. That's a reason to crack down on him. I don't know if that's a reason to indict the first sitting mayor in the history of New York City. I'm a little struck by it. So here's Eric Adams, cut 27.
We are not surprised. We expected this. This is not surprising to us at all. And I ask to wait and hear our side to this narrative. From here, my attorneys will take care of the case so I can take care of the city. My day-to-day will not change. I will continue to do the job for 8.3 million New Yorkers that I was elected to do.
So he's going to do it, and the governor could remove him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little used rule and power that they have, could remove him. But she says, I'm going to hold back because I want to see if he could do the job under indictment.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty dynamic situation here. And a lot of people point to politics. What did he do? He called out Joe Biden. He said that money is not coming, help is not on the way, and that the federal government has allowed 250,000 illegal immigrants to come through New York City, and it's costing us $5.5 billion. And he was very critical. Next thing you know, we have an investigation. Coincidence?
Well, listen, the investigation's been going on for a long time, apparently, and it's reaching back to, you know, things like we talked about from years ago. Now, listen, if you are soliciting illegal campaign funds from foreign sources, that's something you're going to have to explain. There are people who will say over the years, listen, money has filtered into their campaigns. FEC finds it. Somebody points it out, and they're like, we completely disavow that. It was a mistake. We return the money. He's not getting that benefit of the doubt here. So we'll have to see, you know, what is the language? What are the texts? What was the transaction of money? Was there a hiding of it? Were there straw donations? So, listen, he seems anxious to get going on it. It is a lot, as you know, to not you, because you're not under indictment that I know of, but it's a lot to fight, you know, legal cases to look at President Trump. He's got multiple going in state and federal courts all over the place, and he's still running for president. So I think Adams is going to make the argument that he can do his job and handle this case.
So there's so many questions with his assassination investigation. The minute it happened, he survived. We know about Corey Compitore didn't. So tragedy struck. But I thought to myself, the last thing the Secret Service wants to do along with the FBI is not do a thorough, transparent investigation. But that does seem like it is happening. They're not getting the cooperation from the FBI. They're not getting the interviews that they needed. Listen to Corey Mills, Cut 21.
We also have to start looking at the adversarial challenges when it comes to Iran, who, as you know, the Ayatollah himself recently just posted a video that was alluding to the fact that they want to try another assassination, saying that revenge is imminent, even showing the Mar-a-Lago estates and the president playing golf. We need to take these threats very seriously, especially when we look at things like Mershan, who is the 46-year-old Pakistani who flew to Iran for a series of days, then to Houston, Texas, was stopped in Houston, Texas, and questioned by the FBI.
Eli Crane said, he has a lot to say. First off, your comment on this, the Iran threat that looms, and then the two assassinations that need to be examined.
Yeah, and everybody who's seen the intel that we haven't seen says it is shocking, it is appalling, it is terrifying. And, you know, I think that if you've got people that you know have got a number of our former and current leaders on hit lists, I mean, that's a big problem. And it is a 24/7 monitoring issue that a number of, you know, Trump administration officials have, President Trump has. But lawmakers seem pretty stunned by what they've seen behind closed doors. I think more of that's going to trickle out to us. And on the assassination attempts, I mean, honestly, I think that a lot of what we've discovered, we wouldn't know without local law enforcement, who immediately was telling a different story on some key points. And we have heard some admissions from Secret Service, the acting director, saying, like, we made a mistake. We have to take responsibility for this. But still, I feel like we are hearing conflicting information from locals about who was responsible for what and how it was communicated.
Hey, Shannon, how about who killed the sniper? We're hearing that it was local law enforcement that killed the sniper. I'm watching the autopsy report verbalized and during the hearing, and it says, okay, the bullet went in the head and out the left lip. All right, so if it's in the head, that's the right side. And it's out the left lip, it's out the left side, obviously. Well, the snipers were located on his left and stage right. So who hit him? And then we hear Ron Johnson say that the sniper said that there were bullets whizzing by them because it was on tape. Well, who was shooting back at the snipers? Was it the assassin? So I also want you to hear what Eli Crane said, maybe one of America's premier snipers now in Congress. Listen.
What is going to happen next time if there is a 10-man Hezbollah team, snipers, assaulters, and drone operators launching coordinated and overlapping assassination attempt on the president? I think we can all see by now that their likelihood of success would be tremendous. My suggestion to the former president and to his campaign is that he beef up his private security detail of individuals who are loyal to him.
So he wants him to get private security. The way we got Karzai, kept Karzai safe in the middle of a war zone with the Taliban and everybody else trying to kill him, the way we got Gahani, the way we handled different Iraqi officials, was with Secret Service, with our special operators. And that's what Eli's saying. Right now, the Secret Service is so bad that the president's got to surround himself, write a check from his own pocket, and get his own people. Have you heard that?
I mean, but how crazy is that we're talking about that for a, number one, former president of the United States, and number two, the leading presidential candidate nominee from his party? I mean, would we say that to any other, nominee or candidate out there, like, well, okay, this might not be good enough, so you're going to have to staff up out of your pocket? Trump may be one of the only ones who could actually afford to do that, but should he have to? And should he have to cancel or change rally plans because he's being told there's not enough Secret Service to staff him for his campaign trips?
It's crazy. Shannon, who do you have on?
We've got Senator Katie Britt, Senator Chris Coons with us, and we're going to talk about all the political stuff because they're both, you know, surrogates for the campaigns, but also about, you know, other things like the filibuster. Are you going to blow that up over abortion? You know, there's a lot going on in the world.
There is. We have Dave McCormick, I went on the campaign trail with him.
I'm looking forward to your going out on the road. Those are always very fun.
Right. I got to dress casual. It's hard for me to dress casual.
Did you?
Yeah, I wore jeans.
You used to be in a tie.
What'd you say?
Did you wear a tie with your jeans? With these dress-up jeans?
No, I didn't. You know, I got, for Christmas, a blazer with a vest sewn in.
Oh.
And it's a type of look that I'm never going to be able to pull off myself. Tell me what you think. And also you can listen to it. My interview with Dave McCormick, who thinks he's going to win that Senate seat against Casey. He's, you know, basically if Trump wins, he wins. That's how close it is.
Pennsylvania's a tough one.
And they're back Butler next week with the assassination, the side of this first assassination attempt. So that's going to be interesting. And then we got Tom Cotton coming on, as well as Rob Schneider of the SNL comedian, 50
like
years
fun.
In SNL.
I think it's going to be informative. Good. Fun right. and informative.
I just feel bad for you because you need to go out and relax Saturday night. But with my show on,
there's
you're not
no
going to be able to.
It's about show prep and One Nation. And let me ask you, you're referencing this fancy new blazer. Is this the first time you've worn it since you got it for Christmas?
I think so. I think this is the first time I even talked about it.
We got to get you out more often.
I know. Casual. People get me out, but I'm always dressing up.
I have the same problem. I can dress for work, like nice suits and beautiful dresses, or I'm in like my workout clothes. There's not a lot in between.
We have the same problem.
Right.
Whatever you do, if you invite Shannon Bream or Brian Kilmeade out, don't make it an in-between. Make it work. We're either going to work out, which we can do.
Or
black tie. All right?
Because if you want me to get in jeans, it gets a little bit janky for me.
Right. Same with me. I got we'll talk about my jean selection, too. I never know what's in. I just know
I don't
it feels
either
good.
Because is it long and skinny? Is it bell-bottomy 1970s? Is it faded? Is it acid wash like from 1980s when I was in high school? I can't keep up.
The abuse of jeans.
Don't get me started on the socks.
Right. The abuse of jeans has to stop in this country.
Yeah, and the socks. The socks length. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't handle it.
I go ankle. I don't care what happens in America. I go ankle.
I feel safest there.
Yes.
I'm with you.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to watch for your outfit Saturday night and your interviews.
Shannon Bream, thank you.
Bye.
From Fox News Sunday, check your local listings. When we come back, actually, let me squeeze in a call right now. Carol over in Rockland County, New York. Hey, Carol.
Hi. Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited. Thank you.
Thank you.
My call. I told the operator I love you. And, no offense, but I mean, I listen.
Right.
I watch you every
morning.
That isn't
just an operator. Carol, that's the producer. That's the executive producer of the show.
Wonderful. She sounds like so sweet. It was a pleasure talking to her.
Wait a second.
Really
Eric,
was, but
would you back up Carol's description of Allison?
I don't know who she's talking about.
Well, she made me very comfortable. I have tried so many times. I told her one time I held on for 45 minutes and then the show was over.
That was my fault.
But I didn't give up. But I just wanted to tell you.
But Carol, let me just say this. If you're in Peekskill, New York, October 20th, I hope to see you in person. Because we're doing History, Liberty, and Laughs tour on stage.
I know, but I watch you every Saturday night. Also, I tape every show if I miss it, if I'm not going to be here. But anyway, thank you for your support for Israel.
Absolutely.
You are wonderful. I mean, most of the station is like that, which I like. That's why I also watch Fox all the time. I do sometimes another station for a few minutes, but there's nothing like Fox. But thank you for your support all the time. Thank you. It really means a lot. Did you see his speech today?
Yes. You're talking about President Trump's remarks with Zelensky by his side?
Right.
Or do you mean the Prime Minister Netanyahu?
Bibi Netanyahu. Oh, did you watch it?
In and out, because I'm doing the show at the same time, but he was very direct. You loved it?
Oh, my God. He hit everything. It was, and the way they walked out. I mean, but they always do.
Right.
The country.
Yeah, they just walk out. What can you do? But I'm glad we have a world body to walk out on. Meanwhile, we're providing securities for all these mutants. Unbelievable. This is what I'm saying. And thanks so much, Carol. I really appreciate your support. But there's already election interference. It's already happening. When President Trump can't do an outdoor rally in a battleground state like Wisconsin, where he can't go where he wants to go because they can't secure it because of the UN or because he's such a target, that is election interference. The Secret Service unable for whatever reason. I hate being critical of law enforcement. It's against my nature. But the management, not the people that throw themselves in front of bullets, so please don't be insulted. Not the state cops that have to combine with the Secret Service, but there's already election interference. The investigation that goes on that keeps Trump back, the ones that kept him indoors, and now in Wisconsin, the backstretch, 30-plus days left, he cannot go unless it's going to be an indoor event, which, by the way, costs more money and you still have to secure. With a smaller crowd, less people affected. So you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks so much. Back in a moment. We're going to wrap up this hour. And don't forget, One Nation, Saturday at 9 p.m.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, welcome back, everybody. Just quick notes. Well, coming up on One Nation Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be repeated again. I forgot what the repeat time is. But we have Tom Cotton, my day on the campaign trail with Dave McCormick, an interview with Rob Schneider. We've got a great panel with Danielle Pletka, you might have heard here, and Mark Thiessen. We have all the breaking news that's happening at the UN, what's happening on the campaign trail in the Senate. So I don't know if you heard earlier, but Senator Capito believes that the next one after the layup in West Virginia, the next one that could flip is Tim Sheehy, had a tester by 6. So that could be it. And now where you see Bernie Moreno moving up in Ohio, they're in a dead heat. And Ohio, Trump's winning by 10 points. Susan, listen on WABC in upstate New York. Hey, Susan.
Hi. Brian, you said there's lots going on in the world, and this is not a conspiracy theory. This is something Grassley has already had a hearing in the Senate with 40 other bipartisan senators about the 320,000 children. Department of Health and Human Services has changed a rule that has for the unaccompanied children program that has allowed these children to, they have the receipts and they have whistleblowers from DHHS. So these are the unelected bureaucrats that Trump is talking about. And women care about this. This 320,000.
Susan, he brought it up yesterday. It's about time. You are right. It's so underreported. 300,000 people with useless total track of since they crossed the border. It's nuts. Thanks, Susan. Now, what's the matter, Allison?
I said we want to end on a slightly lighter note.
Let's
hear it. Fallon did something funny with Trump.
Do you want to learn Spanish?
It's got to be perfecto.
Then you need Duolingo. Trompetición. It's easy. Repeat after me. Mañana.
Melania.
Siesta.
Suspesti.
Animales.
Animales.
So funny. Fallon also had a very good, that monologue was really strong last night. It was pretty funny. Hey, keep it here, everyone. Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.